It's time to wake to sleep with the number one sleep authority, Sleep Science Today, and Sleep Better Tonight.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today. This is a show where we talk about sleep and the science behind sleep. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky, and today we have a guest. Her name is Carly Basden, and she is a sleep and stress resilience coach. So, Carly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Great, great. We're happy to have you. So today, obviously, we're talking about sleep and stress resilience, and certainly stress is a big factor that impacts people's sleep for so many different reasons. And I want to eventually get into your story. I'd love to hear about how you got into this. But before we do that, can you just start us off with a little bit of basic background about the concept of sleep inertia? What is that, and how is that relevant to someone's sleep?
So sleep inertia is just the term for that morning grogginess. And that you experience right away when you wake up. And so some degree of sleep inertia is completely normal. It's a normal biological transition of your brain. And, you know, when we first wake up in the morning, the brain doesn't instantly turn on. It takes some time to transition and to kind of come fully online. Our circadian rhythm is still ramping up. Our cortisol is still ramping up. The brain is literally changing states. And I think some people can tangibly see this transition more at night where, you know you're alert. You start to get drowsy and then you go to sleep. But sometimes we forget that that is also happening in the morning. And so, you know, that waking up is that more on a dimmer switch process as opposed to a light switch. I know for me personally, I've spent almost all my life with significant morning grogginess, like inability to get out of bed, needing other people to get me out of bed, whether that was, you know, growing up, my college roommate, my husband, setting 5 and 6 alarms and snoozing all of them. So that, you know, profound tiredness, trouble getting motivated in the morning, especially after becoming a mom and, you know, added demands, is something I've experienced for decades. And so with that, though, I've also seen the other side where now I've been able to change that reality and optimize my sleep and nervous system and my habits and finally feel like me in the morning. And so now I've narrowed that to where I can feel awake and ready to go and moving with some energy, you know, within 10 or 15 minutes of waking up.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So I love your explanation there, because there's so many different people that I speak to. And because they're different people, they have different experiences. So there are some people that I speak to who will say to me, I wake up at, you know, 6 o'clock every day, and I just wake up. My body just wakes up. I'm up. I'm ready to go. And that's just the way my body is. Other people will describe more of what you were describing, which is, oh my God, I got to drag myself out of bed. It's so hard. I'm so tired. Or you get the ones who say, well, yeah, I got up to my alarm. I got out of bed. But, you know, all throughout the day, I'm just kind of like, I feel sleepy or groggy or fatigued. They don't really know what word they want to say. Any comments on that? Like, you know, there's such wide variations.
Yeah. And so there's so many factors that contribute to that morning grogginess. So when you first mentioned those people who can get up and get out of bed, sometimes it can be their chronotype or their normal circadian genetic disposition. But there's a lot of other factors that can contribute, you know, on this big scale. So as I said before, the grogginess isn't always the problem, but what we want to look at is that duration and that intensity. And so for some people, or for average, I guess, is considered to be around 15 to 30 minutes. That can extend up to an hour, again, because a lot of factors can contribute, personal differences and such. But some factors that can worsen it are, of course, sleep deprivation, sleep debt, circadian misalignment. If you're being awoken from deep sleep, you know, if you think of coming out of deep sleep is going to take longer than if you're coming out of light sleep, that sleep stage matters. Chronic stress and that nervous system dysregulation, medications, hormones, medical conditions, mood instability, you know, your outlook on life, if you have, you know, purpose to get out of bed and get going, alcohol use at night, you know, there's so many different factors that contribute. And so it's exactly right, as you mentioned, there's no one or the other. There's this kind of scale of how it truly affects people. But what I see is that people are, because we don't really make that connection of it being a normal process, people are so hard on themselves. Like, what's wrong with me? Why can't I get moving? And sometimes when we shame ourselves, it actually can create more stress, which ironically makes things worse, right? So for me, like, as I mentioned, that was my reality for so long. And I always just thought, I'm not a morning person. I sleep really hard. This is just who I am. And now looking back, you know, I didn't have good sleep skills. I didn't have those habits. There were a lot of reasons I can see as to why I had those things going on. And so, you know, knowing what I know now, when I do have mornings that it's harder to get up, and it still happens, even being where I'm at and doing what I'm doing, right? My kids wake up in the night, they're sick. Something's on my mind, right? Those things happen. But now when I do get disrupted sleep and my, you know, sleep inertia, my grogginess is longer than normal, I know that I have my aligned circadian rhythm and I have other factors. And I know in my mind, like, my body will wake up and do its job. So part of it is, you know, giving yourself grace and kind of improving that mindset. Because again, you know, even when your sleep habits are great, life happens. So,
right. Well, it's interesting. So obviously, you know, you're sharing that you have this issue and you've experienced it yourself, and it's kind of hard to get out of bed. I'm in your camp. I am not one of those people that wakes up and I'm ready to go. I need to, like, you know, kind of get myself started. So, you know. But not only did you experience it for yourself, but now you've turned that into a career. So can you give us a little bit of the backstory here? What got you from being a person who experiences this to being someone who helps with it?
Yeah. So as far as my background in general, so I, you know, as you mentioned, I'm a certified sleep and stress resilience coach. I am a mom of two little ones. I'm a wife of 14 years. I've also been a physician assistant or PA for 12 years working in the medical field. And I, you know, around the time where, I had kids was right when the pandemic happened, working in the medical field, in the hospital, being postpartum, pumping, you know, to feed my kids while I was there. And so many stressors started to build up. So even though, you know, normal for me was this grogginess, those stressors really started to stack up. And I experienced significant burnout at that time, trying to balance all those things and dealing with so much unknown and uncertainty and stress while going to work and taking care of my family and having disrupted sleep. And then I, you know, tried to do more. You know, I'm the type of person, I love learning. I love gaining everything I know. And so that's when I went and did the certifications and, you know, I did it for me. Like, I need to get myself out of this pit so that I can care for my family and find joy in life again. And then I did another certification specific to sleep that went more in depth. And that's when I started to realize, like, how many people struggle with both stress and sleep, how they're all connected. And that really kind of gave me that passion to, like, start to talk to it more and help other people with it, because it is, I think, one of the top two struggles. But then too, sleep and stress are like almost the foundation of all your other health habits, right? If you are so stressed, it's hard to eat well. It's hard to exercise. Same if you don't get sleep and you're too tired, it's harder to do those other health habits. And so that's when, you know, I dove into this passion and created my business, Carly Rae Wellness, where I get to kind of live out this passion and empower other women to restore their sleep so they can wake up rested and have the energy for what matters most in their life.
Right, right. Wow. Well, I mean, it certainly helps you and your credibility with the fact that you have lived it yourself. And so you deal with the issues that you're helping others with. Mm-hmm. You know, So from the concept of sleep inertia that we're talking about, how long would sleep inertia be considered normal? Like, you know, when do we have to worry? What's going on?
Yeah, so the typical range is around 15 to 30 minutes, but again, can extend up to 60, maybe 90 on a longer end. But once you're getting into that all day exhaustion, you know, that points to there's deeper issues going on.
So when you talk about exhaustion, there's so many different words that people use. There's grogginess, there's fogginess, there's fatigue, there's sleepy, there's exhaustion. Do you deal with one or more? Or are they all the same to you? Or how, you know, what do you do when a client comes and they give you one of these words? How do you figure out what you're actually dealing with?
Yeah. And so for me, I guess I consider that exhaustion is not just physical. You know, we have mental exhaustion, emotional exhaustion, relationship, you know, our health is so dynamic in those ways. So, but when I think about, you know, normal baseline healthy people, the reasons for their exhaustion can be predictable based on their life and what they're kind of going through. So, I guess when I think about, you know, a lot of those terms, like you said, can be the same thing. But really just asking the person more specific to what they mean and getting deeper into like what is actually going on in their life. I feel like as a society, we kind of have this expectation that we are meant to be productive all the time. And when we get tired, you push through or you get caffeine, when in reality, the way that our body is created for our energy management, there are, you know, the natural energy pattern is after an hour and a half to 2 hours, your brain needs to filter through what it's been through. Your body needs some restoration. So we need those times of recovery through the day to actually get recharged. And so what most people do is they start to get tired and then they just use caffeine to get through. And so that's basically leading your body to that exhaustion, not allowing it to recover like it's meant to. And again, like, you know, we pretend we're like the Energizer Bunny. We don't get breaks all day long. And then we wonder why we're so tired. And it's like, yeah, look at all the demands I have and what I did all day. Like, this is normal that I'm feeling tired. Right. I don't know.
Right. You know? Well, you know, I hear what you're saying there. And, you know, our culture has found some ways to, we've created our own solutions for dealing with these issues. And I am going to leave that as a teaser as we go into a commercial break so that when we come back, we can start talking about some of the cultural solutions that we have developed and that we use. So we will be right back on Sleep Science Today with Carly Bazed.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today. And sleep better tonight.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking about sleep inertia and stress related to sleep. And before the break, we were going to talk about cultural solutions that we've developed. Now, I know you mentioned a little bit before the break how sometimes people will turn to caffeine. Let's talk a little bit more about that. Tell us about how our culture views caffeine and what we do right and wrong.
Yeah. So, you know, we treat caffeine like it's a wake-up switch. But in reality, especially when we're looking at the morning and that morning grogginess that we've been talking about, it actually doesn't wake up the brain in the morning. And the reason for that has to do with how it actually works in our body, right? Caffeine is a drug and it impacts our physiology. And so when I learned this, my mind was kind of blown. But it doesn't wake up the brain, as I mentioned, and the way caffeine works, so it's an adenosine receptor blocker. Adenosine is the neurotransmitter in the brain that is responsible for the sleepiness or drowsiness. So once adenosine builds up, your brain knows that it's sleepy time, and then it clears it out as you sleep. When caffeine is used, it blocks the receptor on the adenosine receptor, and the brain cannot register that adenosine is building up. Well, uh-huh. In the morning, there's really not as much adenosine hanging around. So when you're adding caffeine to the blocker, it's not really working on the mechanism of why you're sleepy in the morning. Adenosine is really not the issue in the morning as to why you're tired. There is still some adenosine around, but that's not why you're sleepy. And mm-hmm. So when we use caffeine, it more so impacts our, it kind of compounds with our natural cortisol rise in the morning, our nervous system, right? It activates, we get sweaty, our heart races, and it can just lead to dependence. And so, like I said, when we use it in that way, sometimes it leads to more side effects, then, as I said, it's really not working on the mechanism of waking you up. And mm-hmm. I will say, I'm not anti-caffeine. I'm going to say that. I love coffee. Morning coffee was like the most recent habit I worked on, even knowing what I know. And, you know, I think in the back of my mind, I've just felt like I needed it and I didn't want to go without it. But it's amazing, actually, like how much confidence then you get when you realize you don't have to depend on it. Your body does have systems in place that help wake you up. And it kind of gives you that autonomy and it gives you that, you know, choice again of that behavior of using coffee instead of being dependent and grabbing it all day long. And so I don't have a problem treating myself to a latte, you know, a pumpkin spice latte in the fall. But usually I do that strategically and kind of time it strategically as opposed to right away in the morning or like all day long, you know?
Right, right. So clarify something for me. So if adenosine is not so much the issue in the morning because we've just slept and kind of depleted, you know, the supply, so caffeine is not really blocking much of anything, what is it that leads to that inertia then? Like, yeah, why are people still sleepy?
Yeah. And so I think it gets to be this cycle. You know, we talked about some of the factors that worsen it. You know, if your circadian rhythm isn't aligned, maybe you're using caffeine later in the day and your adenosine didn't all wash away and you have extra. The other thing is, you know, if you use caffeine in the morning and you're already blocking those receptors, any adenosine left over isn't getting metabolized because the brain doesn't recognize that it's there. So you're kind of starting at a, like you have some adenosine in the bank, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But the factors that contribute can really kind of add up. Things get to be like cyclical, I guess, if that makes sense, you know, where if you're having a hard time sleeping or you're using caffeine all day or your nervous system is activated all night, maybe you're not getting a deep recovery. So there's a lot of things that can contribute to, you know, the depth of your sleep. If your nervous system is remaining activated, those repair systems aren't getting activated because that happens in deep sleep. That recovery that you experience from sleep might not have occurred for various reasons as well.
So if someone is looking to use caffeine as an assistance device for sleep-related issues or trying to not, you know, be sleeping, is there, like, strategic timing that someone can use, or how would they best address that issue?
Yeah, so the best way would be just delaying caffeine for around 60 to 90 minutes. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, you know, I talked about how there are natural systems in place that wake you up. So when you delay it, it allows those systems to come online naturally. So one is going to be that cortisol, as I mentioned, as well as your circadian rhythm. And then, you know, like for me, if I was drinking coffee right away in the morning, I was certainly not eating breakfast before that. And, you know, that can lead to other issues, you know, that can increase your blood sugar and, but also just impact your nervous system. And also just give you more side effects if you're having it on an empty stomach. I know that was the case for me. Like I definitely relied on caffeine a lot, and I definitely was having it before breakfast. And then, you know, my morning would be so rushed. I'd get to the hospital and my heart, I could feel me pumping, you know, like we all get that, like, all right, like boom, boom, boom. But, when you can delay it, as I mentioned, you know, cortisol rises in the morning. That's what helps wake us up. But the curve that it follows is that it then is to decline. And so when we delay it, you actually can optimize your productivity, because then if you take caffeine, then it can kind of optimize your energy and productivity to kind of be boosted a little better. And so this can lead to having less total caffeine. So instead of, you know, needing it right away, then another 2 hours later, you can kind of optimize your use there. It can also lead to fewer crashes. You know, again, if you're eating breakfast before your cortisol level has come down, again, the caffeine can, if you're, you know, just having one cup of coffee and you're more optimized, then you're going to have better nighttime sleep if you're not drinking it all day long. And I think I already mentioned, you know, like having breakfast before that. And so for me, like once I started, as I said, like, you know, it takes a while because it's a habit, right? And we're dependent on it. But once I like started really thinking through, you know, adjusting that habit, I started to realize that, like, for me, I really just like having something warm in the morning. Like, I'm a cold person in the morning. I love, like, that warm coziness, something like it just kind of gives you some comfort. And so now I've been able to consciously swap that. You know, I don't need coffee. I can, or caffeine. I can have a warm beverage of another choice. So for me, I like to have, you know, some lemon water with sea salt, get some electrolytes in. I've started drinking some green tea, but again, I kind of like do that strategically. And so I'm more like pro aligning those rhythms and optimizing that. And so when you start to, you know, when caffeine supports your biology instead of replacing it or forcing it, people are often surprised how much better they feel.
Right. Right. Well, it's, you know, I'm going to say, you know, something here that will make people think, you know, oh, the horror. How could he possibly say that? But what I have started doing personally is, like you said, I enjoy the warm drink in the morning. And I enjoy the flavor of a good coffee, but I will drink decaf. Now, I know that's going to send people into shock. Yeah. Oh, my God, how can you possibly drink decaf coffee?
Yeah.
But for me, it works.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So then
the horror, I love it.
Yes. Well, I will go into a coffee shop and, you know, typically what will happen is there'll be someone in the line in front of me and they'll place their order. And sometimes the question comes up, you know, do you want decaf or caffeinated? And the comments are like, decaf? Oh my God, who drinks that stuff? Yeah. And then of course I'm right behind them and I order a decaf.
Yeah.
So some people just don't get the same impact.
Yeah. It's the same too. I think like, if you're a coffee person and someone does not drink coffee at all, they're like, how do you not do that? What do you mean? Again, the horror. How do you not? You know,
right.
It's the right. Same when someone doesn't like chocolate or doesn't like peanut butter, you know?
Yeah, I think we just lost half of our listeners. Like, oh my God, he doesn't drink that many coffee.
As I said, I'm not anti.
Well, let me ask you this then. So for those people who do prefer to have caffeine, whether it be coffee, caffeinated tea, sodas, chocolate, whatever the caffeine source may be, is there a maximum amount that they want to have? And is there a time of day that they should not continue to have any caffeine?
Yeah. So caffeine metabolized. So it's half life or, you know, the amount where half of it has been metabolized is around 4 to 6 hours. And so if half of it is hanging around 4 to 6 hours later, it can still impact your sleep. And so a rule I use is, you know, no later than like noon. but, you know, some people, depending on when they go to sleep, can maybe get away with, you know, 1 p.m. or so. You know, the amount, you know, I don't think you need much more than 1 or 2 cups. Again, depending on what other sources you have. You know, you mentioned, I don't know that chocolate, how much of a source it is, you know, depending. But those are kind of the unwritten rules, I guess, I follow.
Okay. Yeah.
Or would recommend, kind of depending on what other people or what the person themselves is, you know, really needing. You know, most of the clients that I have, they've actually tried to limit their caffeine. You know, they're at that point of like, I've tried everything. And so, you know, I haven't had to like help other people modify the caffeine as much just because, yeah, again, when you're having such sleep issues, you do try everything. So
great. Right. Well, I'll give a Sleep Science Today tip. You know, I often tell my patients when the day is half, it's time for decaf. And that's just an easy thing to remember so that they, I mean, typically tell them no longer than, you know, 2 p.m. For exactly the reason you said, because the half-life is like 4 to 6 hours and they don't want it to interrupt their sleep. But We need to talk about chronic exhaustion, and we can't do that until we take a commercial break. But when we come back, we will. So stay tuned. We'll see you soon on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Be sure to visit sleepsciencetoday.com for access to all of our channels and special offers.
Sleep Science Today. And sleep better tonight.
All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Carly Basden, and we were about to talk about chronic stress and exhaustion. What does that mean, and how does it impact people?
So some people actually, you know, get some sleep or get enough hours, right? But still feel chronically exhausted. And sometimes there's some things happening beneath the surface that when they go and look for tips or sleep advice, that it kind of misses. And so what I want to emphasize is that sleep duration alone doesn't always equal restoration. So the number doesn't always equal quality. And there's this disconnect that, you know, we've been taught to like think of sleep like a number, get 7 to 9 hours and there's your recommendation. But it's more complex than that, you know. And so if people are chronically exhausted, you know, especially if they are at least getting some sleep, that nervous system, there's three things, I guess, it boils down to that I consider. And that one is that nervous system state or like a fragmented recovery. And so, you know, people think that sleep is passive, but it's so active. Your brain is so active, repairing and restoring and clearing out debris and, you know, getting rid of things that don't need to be there. And going through your memory and everything you've taken in and filtering and consolidating memories, right? And so much goes on. But if our nervous system has not shifted into that parasympathetic dominant state where it can really relax, and usually this is that chronic stress activation, then the system kind of stays in this state of hyperarousal where, you know, cortisol's elevated all day. And then even during sleep, the brain kind of remains alert and deep sleep becomes less consolidated. Growth hormone, repair processes, those happen in deep sleep. And so if you're not getting that, that kind of leaves you feeling unrestored. And so I like to think of it as like you plug in your phone to charge it, but you're still using it and you have all these apps open, right? 1 hour of time is not going to charge as much if you're using it as opposed to like you plug it in, you leave it alone, you let the screen go dark. So there right. is that difference of the quality. And so, again, you can get sleep and still not really enter that true recovery due to your nervous system state. And so, you know, the other thing is your circadian rhythm. If you don't have that internal clock, registered, you get very out of sync and your body in general is less efficient. It doesn't know when to release hormones. And, you know, inconsistent schedules, not having the same bedtime. So like the body and brain get to sleep and it's like, okay, you know, we don't really recognize this pattern because it's different every day. And so you're not getting that kind of anchor. So the timing also matters just as much as the duration. And then, you know, we've been talking about stress. And so that third thing that I think, you know, we all experience is that's a huge contributor is the kind of emotional and cognitive load. So, you know, as we mentioned, the demands that we're under is so much, that mental load of parenting and work and groceries and clean eating and self-care and medical appointments and planning for this. And it's overwhelming at times. And then there's also some anticipation stress. You know, you have a big meeting the next day. You're not going to you're thinking about that. You don't kind of rest as much, or people ruminate at night where, you know, at night you finally, like, the brain and body get to chill and then it starts filtering through things. But then some people start to replay it and worry and such. And so as we talked a little bit, you know, exhaustion isn't just physical, right? But there is that essence of, you know, I have all these demands going on, that prolonged stress, rhythm disruption. And when that, you know, continues long enough, you know, it starts to affect our hormones and how they're released, our appetite, our energy through the day. And so, you know, as I mentioned, a background in medicine, you know, we kind of focus for the most part on physical health. I think people are becoming more aware of mental health, but then, you know, there is also emotional health and environment. The environment affects our health. Our relationships affect our health, our, you know, existential health, or our purpose in life, our spiritual health, all those things, again, you know, contribute. And so looking at the whole person, and again, like, giving yourself grace that, like, wow, look at everything I'm dealing with. No wonder I'm tired. Let me start, you know, optimizing my recovery and such. So,
right. Well, so with all of that, let's talk about some natural, you know, evidence-based practices that people can put into place if we have a listener who resonates with this. Yeah, it's really hard for me to get out of bed in the morning. And now you're going to take my caffeine away. And so what are some realistic options that a person has to help improve their sleep and their waking?
Yeah, I think we often overcomplicate things and we look for all these hacks, but in reality, like, simple habits matter. And so, as I mentioned, you know, your body has this natural system. And so if we work with it and give it the right signals, we can kind of optimize that energy in the morning. And so the three highest impact signals, first is going to be light. And that morning light really anchors your circadian timing. It signals cortisol to rise. And that really is going to be that anchor for the day. And, you know, for me, I started opening up my blinds every morning. And it was amazing to me, like, just how simple that is. But, like, it doesn't take that long for that to kick in and your, you know, the receptors in your eyes to start taking that and for your rhythm to get aligned. On a similar note, food intake jumpstarts your metabolism. So getting food within an hour of waking up, because you also have that gut-brain connection. It kind of gives that feedback to the brain, you know, it's wake time, and helps reinforce that. And again, we talked about eating before caffeine is helpful to mitigate its effects. But also, like, having fuel for the day. I know so many people just skip breakfast, and you're not giving your body the fuel it needs to have energy for the day. And so that can really steady, I guess, your energy. Mm-hmm. And then the third is gentle movement. That doesn't mean exercise, but movement tells the brain, oh, the body's up and moving. Like, I need to wake up and kind of catch up here. So the day has started. So those three things, again, very simple things. It doesn't have to be complicated, but those are, you know, science proven cues for the brain to wake up and get going in the morning. And, you know, your brain is very smart and it catches on very quickly. And you're, you know, it doesn't take too long to get those circadian levers aligned. And so, you know, as I mentioned, for me, you know, I have just a very simple morning routine where, you know, if you develop something that's good for you in your life, it can propel your energy. So like when I first wake up, I mentioned I open up my curtains, I let in the light, I go to the kitchen, I always put away the dishes, the clean dishes, and my kids are awake. I get them breakfast to start preparing the process, you know, for school and lunches and backpacks. But, you know, like even if it's not light out, the other two factors, you know, a time change and whatever, those other two factors are also the anchors that get that circadian rhythm up and going. And so, again, we're not forcing alertness. We're allowing the body to naturally do what it's supposed to do when it's cued with the things that it needs. And so, again, that feeling a little slow in the morning is not a failure. It's your normal physiology. And so, again, working with the body's natural rhythms instead of against them can really improve your energy drastically and help us just feel better instead of trying to force it or, you know, shame ourselves for being so tired.
Right, right. Well, so you mentioned as one of those things, gentle movement and kind of just getting yourself going. I'm curious, do you have any opinions or comments one way or the other about, in general, the concept of exercise? Like some people will do exercise in the morning, some people will do exercise at night, some people don't exercise. Pros, cons on any of that in terms of helping overall with the sleep and the fatigue and waking and all the things we're talking about?
Yeah. So I mentioned a little bit, you know, there are different chronotypes or genetic dispositions to when you prefer to be awake and go to sleep. And so there are the certain people that like they get up and they get out of bed and they're like good to go. And, you know, usually their cortisol is already high and going. And so that's the one thing with exercise is that it does stress the body. And so cortisol can also rise. And so some people who already have that natural energy, they actually, it would be better for them to exercise later in the day when they're kind of decreasing on their energy levels, and that boosts them to get them through the rest of the day. Uh-huh. There are other people who are that more groggy in the morning. They need more input, and doing some movement and exercise in the morning can be beneficial to activate the cortisol and at least get that rhythm in motion. So it does have, you know, personal, you know, everybody is different, kind of depending on their preferences and their life. And again, that genetic disposition is a small part of it. But, you know, any movement is always good. If you're choosing what kind of exercise, you know, if you're doing that high intensity, you don't want to do that too close to bed. But right. Gentle stretching and yoga is really good for the evening time to get you to relax. But just recognizing that the type of exercise can boost your cortisol. So, you know, that can be a boost. You know, as I kind of mentioned, sometimes early afternoon is a good time. I at one point had a really good schedule where I could go to the gym at that time and I loved it. I felt like my energy was really good. But then, you know, your schedule changes and you have to also fit it in with real life too. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. So we have one last thing I want to cover because we're pretty much at our time here. But I know that because this is the work that you do, that you've put together a program called Redeem Your Sleep. Can you tell us what is that? How does it work?
Yep. So Redeem Your Sleep is my signature sleep coaching program that I walk women through science-backed strategies to reclaim restorative sleep and sustainable energy, as well as deepen their faith. And so Redeem is an acronym kind of for like the process that I follow. You know, we want to reveal root disruptions, figure out what's actually going on, where's the issue at, establish divine rhythms, circadian rhythm, energy pattern rhythms, diffusing the stress response, energize your days, embrace sacred alignment or that mind-body connection and manifest restful living. And so it's not about quick fixes, but it's about understanding your body's natural inclination for certain rhythms, managing stress, building habits sustainably that actually support real recovery. And many women that I work with, it's also an opportunity just to strengthen their spiritual health as well. And so if you want to learn more about that, you can check out Redeem Your Sleep at my website, CarlyRayWellness.com. You can apply there or join my Rhythm Reset newsletter, where I kind of dive deeper into science and scripture and provide some tangible resets for people.
Great. Well, we are out of time for today. So I appreciate you sharing all that you've shared. Sounds like you've been, you know, got a lot of great experience with this and helping people for a while to improve their sleep and improve their sleep inertia issues. So thank you so much for doing what you do. I encourage people, if this is something that affects you as a listener, you certainly have access to Redeem Your Sleep and take a look. And we look forward to seeing you on future episodes of Sleep Science Today, even though I talked about decaf coffee. Come on back and listen to another episode. So, Carly, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
You have been listening to Sleep Science Today, your number one sleep authority.
Sleep Science Today.